If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
If you want a healthier home without the hassle, meet Canopy, beautifully designed wellness essentials for cleaner air, fresher water, and everyday self-care, including humidifiers, air purifiers, shower, bath, and faucet filters. From clean, filtered moisture to help support restful sleep, to filters that help reduce chlorine for softer skin and hair, Canopy upgrades your and your family's daily routines with products that are easy to use and maintain. Shop getcanopy.co and use code PODCAST at checkout for 10% off your order.
Shit. Welcome back to Shit Show Saturday. Welcome, Shit Show Wendy. I want to tell you, can you relate to this as a kid? Like either when you're like playing Barbies or like you're writing stories or whatever, you always have your name that you like at the time, you know? And I had like a long stretch of like where Wendy was always the name that I wanted to name my Barbies and stuff.
Really? So, yeah. Aww, that's so cute. Mm-hmm. I never had really anybody to connect it with other than this really ages me, but Wendy Richter, that was in the WWF at the time.
Oh, I don't even know who that is.
Otherwise, there was nobody other than, you know, Peter Pan.
Peter Pan and the Hamburgers.
Well, that's true.
Okay, so what song do you want played when you walk into a room?
My favorite artist is Tori Amos, so I will choose Raspberry Swirl.
Think if we've had Tori Amos before. Might be the first. It's a good pick. Carbohydrate.
This one was hard, but I went with a French baguette while in France. Very specific.
While in France. That's like I went to this restaurant. There's this fancy restaurant, like kind of like an hour away from me, and they came over with the butter and they were like, this butter was hand churned in France. I'm like, I got it. How are we having that baguette? Are we just like having it raw? We're just raw dogging it?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Torn. Mm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Cheese.
I like a lot of the Swiss or like Alpine cheeses. So I'm going to go with Hollerhocker.
An Alpine go? Hollerhocker. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I've ever heard of that. Is it Holler?
It starts CH. Mm-hmm. It starts
CH. Huh. I'm liking this description. Mm-hmm. Actually, this is like fucking an amazing description. Okay. It says it tastes like brown butter, roasted cashews, and caramelized onions.
Yep.
I love caramelized onions. I love caramelized.
They're an underrated topping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I have to get this cheese.
Please report
ASAP. I never heard of this. Brown butter, roasted cashews, and caramelized onions sold. Wendy, I think that this might be the most impressive cheese choice ever.
I mean, seriously. I do love sharp cheddar.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
Okay, and condiment.
Oh, I love condiments. I fall into that category. Let's say corn and black bean salsa.
Corn and black bean salsa.
It's so good. It's very good on lots of things, but I like it on eggs. And,
do you have like a brand that you like, or do you make it?
Oh, I wish I made it, because it's so hard to find one that's good. Because so many of them have like four beans in them. You're like, I thought this said black beans also. Where are the black beans? I think I kind of go around between what I can find, but there's an Old Dutch one that's okay. And
have you ever tried to make it? It can't be that hard, Wendy.
I should. Yeah, I should, because, and I get a lot of different peppers from my neighbor who has a CSA. So I should just make my own, because I get so disappointed with the ones that I find.
You have to be careful when you use CSA here. People are thinking that means they have childhood sexual abuse. What is it, like a crop sharing? Food
CSA. Yeah, crop sharing. Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I didn't know there was a pepper and childhood sexual abuse connection there.
Oh, no.
Interesting. Okay, solid choices. So, Wendy, when did you find out that you were an adult child?
Well, you know, my dad was an alcoholic, and my sister, we were in our like 20s trying to get me and sometimes my mom to go to Al-Anon meetings, and I was like not interested. It was just easier to ignore it, and I was out of the house, so I was just thinking it wasn't anything that I wanted to think about anymore. So it was, you know, just kind of stuffed it down, and I went back to school in 2020 and got my surgical tech degree. And it was while during my clinical rotation during school, I was fine, because they kind of put us with safe doctors a lot of the time, or like safe rooms that were going to go well. And then when I started working on my own, even if it was a quote unquote, like not that scary kind of a surgeon, I was realizing that I was never asking for help. I would never even consider asking for help if I was in the weeds trying to set up a room, or a doctor would, you know, before we start a case, they will call into the room and say what they need. And a lot of the times I wouldn't know exactly what they wanted, or I didn't know how to set up, because, you know, a lot of times they do the, oh, we'll do it like we always do it, or we'll do it like we did last time. But that doesn't necessarily mean you were the one that was in the room. Mm-hmm. Rotate through rooms and rotate through doctors, even though we work on teams. And I wouldn't ask what that was, and I would just hope it wouldn't come up, or I would hope it would come up when I was on my break or something. And I would just get, it was really strange. So then I started realizing that something was wrong, but I couldn't really put my finger on it other than just saying like, oh, it's a new career. You did your other one for 20 years. You know, this is new. But it was just something about not being able to speak up. And then my sister had read the book, Set Boundaries, Find Peace, A Guide to Reclaiming Yourself. That is, according to my previous therapist, she said that is kind of one of the therapy Bibles. But my sister had
heard of it.
Oh my gosh, it's really good. So my sister was reading it, and she's like, you have to read this book. And I was reading it in my head for other reasons, and I don't even remember why, but everything in there was connecting with situations that were happening in the operating room. Mm. Like, because I didn't realize what that saying you need help, or asking a question, or making things like clearer to you was setting a boundary. Like, I always thought of boundaries as like telling people too much information, yeah, or saying no or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I didn't realize that setting a boundary also meant like setting yourself up for success, kind of in just different ways of life, and even in, especially in work. And that was seeing those examples over and over again in that book made me realize something's off, like within my wiring, basically, or like in my nervous system, because I would just get so, I don't know if the word is agitated, but it wasn't regular stress during the day, or if I was working with the doctor that made me nervous or anything, because there was one in particular that didn't like working with new people, especially new women, and which is sad because she was a woman, but she would just like go out of her way to point things out that I either not even necessarily was doing wrong, but just was constantly like picking on me.
Nitpicking you. Yeah.
Yes. And it was stuff that nobody else ever said anything about because it was fine.
Stupid, you know, shit.
More than one way to do things. And it's not like I was slowing down cases or anything like that. So mm-hmm. it was just like that, those kind of examples over and over again that I realized something is wrong. So then I kept thinking, I don't remember if that book mentions an adult child. It might've been my therapist, because I started therapy after I started realizing that I had this these problems, or if she's the one that suggested it. But then I thought, I love podcasts, and so it's easier for me to listen to stuff in the car or whatever. And so instead of buying a bunch of books, I figured I'd start looking. If I'm like, there's got to be a podcast about this. And then I found you. And then you just nailed it. So like, yeah, like everyone says, but it's true.
I think that this is so interesting, like the not asking for help. I think this is like an interesting version of it that is really common that we probably don't talk about enough, that is like asking for clarifying information. But I'm curious, in the operating room, do you remember like the first real instance that it like really stood out to you? Because I'm assuming that might not always come and bite you in the ass, but like eventually it does. And do you remember the first experience where that happened?
Yes, I do. I had to get some EMDR therapy after that situation. And it was sad because it was the doctor that I liked working with the most. But we did really complex ENT cases. So we were doing flaps and things. So like taking bone and skin from the leg and putting it into the face or the neck or the jaw. And we were taking bone and we did it all the time. But for some reason he wanted, with this particular case, he had said he wanted a separate table set up, just a small place that he could set up that he could work with the bone to get it in the right shape to be able to put it in. And in my head, like we had done that a lot, you know, we would set up another Mayo stand with the different instrumentation for it. But for whatever reason, he wanted to sit down or something like that versus like, you know, normally he'd just stand up. I mean, they have stools. We use stools all the time. I don't remember exactly why this was so specific. So in my head, I was like, well, he wanted a separate spot, but we do this all the time, or we do the whatever. So I was like, if he needs it at the time, we'll just set it up really quick. But instead of asking why, you know, like just getting one extra piece of information, I just kind of shoved it into the back of my head and like, oh, we'll be fine. I'm just like, I don't know why. I'm not a fly by the seat of my pants person normally, but for whatever reason, it was very specific that he wanted it. So all of a sudden he has it must have been because we were using cadaver bone. So he has the cadaver bone, because I remember him standing there holding onto it after I unthawed it for him. And he's like, okay, where's the setup for it? And he's like looking around and there's like, you know, our rooms are huge. We have tons of equipment. And I just froze. And I was like, I thought you could use, and he's like, what? I told you, did it? And just starts yelling at me. Mm-hmm. And as he's screaming at me, I'm starting to tell the nurse, like, I need this, 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 this. And we start setting up this small, I think we used some other small table that was in the room. He's just like, I specifically went over this with you. And he just kept berating me. And I'm just like, want to just melt into the floor. Mm-hmm. But that was the day that I was like, what is wrong with you? And he had every right to be mad. And I just went into myself, you know, tried to do what he want really quickly. And then I probably didn't make a peep the rest of the procedure because I was just completely just like spun out in my head because I just could not figure out how I had gotten there, you know, and why I wasn't based. I mean, it's not even like sticking up for yourself. It's just like, ask a question. It was bad. And then we had a really strained relationship after that for a while. And you know, looking back, I can think of other things that I did. And I was,
well, that's what I was about to ask you was like, cause you still worked in the medical field, right? But this was like, just like a shift into something different. So
yeah.
Like, could you reflect back and like, was it happening before? It just like this now in this role, the stakes were a bit higher.
Yeah, I think so. Because I started thinking back over the, you know, 20 years before as a mostly in the ICU, and a long part of that time I was in the same unit, a lot of the same attendings, you know, a lot of the nurses were the same, the residents and the fellows and the med students would change, but there was probably a core of 20 to 25 attendings that I would work with, and some I got along with really well, and some of them we butted heads, but I didn't have a hard time speaking up to them or like advocating for my patients. But that being said, the first 10 years of my career, I had a really hard time calling a doctor for an order change or going up to a doctor that I didn't normally work with, like on a weekend or something like that, or if I was helping somebody else out on another unit, because I think it's that fear of authority thing. And even though in the ICU it's a little bit more like everybody's kind of even equal, because we all, everyone's so critically ill that everybody has to be on top of their shit to treat people. And for sure, as a dietetic intern preceptor, I had the hardest time telling interns what to do. If they, especially if they weren't doing well, I would go and talk to their like director when I had a problem. I wouldn't talk to the intern directly most of the time, especially if it was a big problem. I'd have her do it. I would have tell her and then have her talk to the intern. And I had one intern that was really like a problem. And I would just shut down when he would do stuff. Oh my God, we were sitting in our workroom one day and he asked one of the doctors, one of the residents, how much he made. And I was like, inappropriate, but I didn't say anything. I was just like, I just froze. I'm like, I cannot, in my head, I was like, I cannot believe you just asked a resident. I mean, in my body language, I was telling him to shut up, but and my friend, the resident, kind of was like, wow, what a bold question to ask. And he like kind of shut it down for me. But at the time I was like, I should have been the one that said, that is so inappropriate. You don't ask people what they make in the hospital. Especially someone that you don't even know, that you don't even work with. But I struggled so hard. And I would have like anxiety the entire week before I had to work with an intern. You could set the clock by it, like 7 full days of anxiety before I start with this new intern. And then, you know, 90% of them were fine. They were wonderful, but it was just so challenging for me to either give up my patience because I'm very territorial, and that, or else try to, you know, I was fine talking about like how to do the job and how to work in the ICU and telling them about like the equipment and showing them around, introducing them to people or whatever. But when it was like one-on-one, breaking down, like if their notes were wrong or whatever, I had a really hard time. And I think that has something to do with a lot of this too, because I think we just wear so many masks with how we grow up and stuff. And you just kind of go along to get along so much. That when it's, then you're the one that has to kind of guide or kind of correct people. It was really hard.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I'm just like trying to decide like where I want to go, because I think there's like, there's so many sort of interesting threads here. I will just say this first. I think that some of these avoidance things that we do are just like baffling. Like, I should just be able to do this as a normal, like, adult. Those things are just so frustrating and kind of like embarrassing and also like fascinating.
Yes. Yeah. The amount of times that I would be embarrassed by my inability. I mean, I could write a book. And then you just like perseverate on it too. Like, I should have done this. Why didn't I do this? Why can't you do this? And I know that's like human nature, but at the same time, when it's the same situation over and over again, it's like, come on. I mean, that will be what I would say about my current job. As much as I, you know, don't like it, I have to make myself do things a lot because we're on such a short time frame to get things done. So I can't just wait it out and see what happens or whatever. Because when I have, it's bit me in the ass. So I just ripped the Band-Aid off now, but I don't know.
Well, maybe it's like the putting off the dentist appointment. It's like you can't call the dentist. And then it's like enough time goes by and you're just like, well, I can never go to the dentist ever again.
So just like healing, learning isn't one size fits all. And if school wasn't exactly your happy place growing up and it's not your kids either, then you'll love knowing there's now a better way with Time for Learning. So Time for Learning is an online homeschooling platform that offers curriculum from pre-K all the way to 12th grade that gives families the flexibility to shape learning around real life. So let's say your family wants to do some traveling or your kid wants to participate in a hobby that doesn't fit into traditional school hours. This is schooling that you can do anywhere at any time. Or perhaps your kid only likes doing math on Mondays. You can set it up to where they only do one subject each day, or you can mix in different subjects each day. Plus, parents get tons of tools like activity planners and transcript templates that help keep everything organized. And they've been trusted by over 1 million students for over 20 years. Y'all. So curious if Time for Learning is right for your family? Well, visit timeforlearning.com. That's time, the number four, learning.com to explore their curriculum and find the perfect plan for your student. And you can get started with a monthly subscription to see just how much your kids enjoy learning on their own terms.
But let's go back to childhood. I mean, where have you connected dots? Was there a memory of like, it is not okay to ask a question, or it is not okay to not know something?
Oh man. I mean, so my dad was the alcoholic. My mom was like chief enabler. I just remember so many times of like always feeling like you were annoying my mom if you asked something, or so many times she just like would tell us to be quiet or whatever. I can put myself in the car in the environment, but I can't remember what the conversations were. Mm-hmm. But I just like, I can feel it and mm-hmm. I can see it, the times where you just get shut down.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like I think I've said that in group before, my husband calls my mom the ice queen because she's just like no emotion, and she'd get mad and stuff, but she never was super happy. We never really had like a lot of fun or anything like that around my house. I'm glad I had my sister, because otherwise, if I would have been an only child, I would have been probably just sitting in my room reading or something. My dad was either drunk or hungover or like so into his work or whatever that anybody else in the house was annoying to him. So you're like walking on eggshells all the time, trying to assess his mood constantly, trying to assess my mom's mood constantly. It was rough. So I could be myself with my friends or my sister or my cousins, but in the house, especially younger, just kind of be quiet.
The older or the younger sister?
We're twins, so I'm 12 minutes older.
I don't even think I knew that. Identical?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. That's an I don't know if we've had an identical twin. So that's interesting. Let's dive into that. What is that experience like?
Well, I don't know any different.
You don't know anything different, you know?
Yeah. So growing up, a lot of people had a hard time telling us apart. My mom made us dressed the same until we were in sixth grade, which is a really long time. And then even then, she would buy the same clothes, but just two different color. And she, I think, pretty close to this, still this day, I'm pretty low contact, but she refers to us as they. We were always like together. They said this, then my sister and I would look at each other. I'm like, did we say that at the exact same time? No, I think you said it or I said it. So my dad, like even up to a couple years ago, still couldn't tell us apart. I was standing next to my sister's husband and he called me my sister's name. I'm like, what the hell, dude? Pay attention.
I think that that's interesting. And I also think that that also might play a part in like not being able to find your voice.
Yes.
And I feel like that lack of differentiation,
yeah,
well, the lack of identity really,
yeah,
you know, also impacted you in developing a voice.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause we were always lumped together. We had mostly the same friends. We played the same sports, you know, and then we went to the same college originally, but I played volleyball and my sister played softball. So I went up for preseason volleyball a month before school started. And I was for the first time, just me. If I didn't tell anyone that I had a twin sister, nobody knew. And it was like starting over. And I had no shade to my sister, but it was wonderful because I had my own identity for the first time in my life at 18. I was completely just me, solo, doing my own thing. I had my own team, my own teammates. She had her own teammates. It was a situation all on its own being on that team, but it was a really good time for me just to finally kind of spread my wings and actually be an individual.
Have you guys ever talked about that experience for both of you?
Yeah, we had a good conversation about it recently, a couple months ago. And yeah, and then we found out some stuff. I mean, my mom's like the triangular communicator, big time. And this thing that I had been upset with her, you know, like for a long time after that, I realized it didn't even happen the way we thought it happened.
Upset with your mom or your sister?
Manipulating it, yeah, with my sister. My mom would like call me to try to get me to do stuff with my sister. Like she, like I said, she had her own teammates, her own friends in college. Like I did too, but she was always thinking that my mom was always thinking that I was like trying to get away from my sister. It's like, what? Like it was like ruining my mom's life to think that they're not, you know, hand in hand skipping down the sidewalk together. But she didn't understand that I was, you know, enjoying my time being a person. Yeah. So
me
she
knew.
Was just constantly in there meddling.
So what would you say then, as far as like the roles that you played, like as kids, was there much of a differentiation?
Yeah. I mean, if I had to say I was anything, maybe the scapegoat. My sister was definitely the peacekeeper, especially when we were younger, but I don't know. I was the one that fought way more. I was more vocal, especially with my dad, but even with my mom, because I'm the only one that's gotten slapped. Yay. And because I just couldn't keep my mouth shut, especially as we got older, I couldn't stand it. I was so angry. I was such an angry kid. And I think they just chalked it up to teenage angst, but I had so much rage in my body that I couldn't control it. And I didn't fight, you know, outside of my sister and I would kind of beat the shit out of each other. But I think we were both just so angry that we just took it out on each other because there was not really any other outlet for it. Thank God I found sports and, you know, that took care of some of it. But I was just a rageful kid. But then I'd go to school or go, you know, be with my friends, and I was totally fine. But if I was at home, I was mad.
Were you guys treated very differently by your parents?
Not really, no. My dad, I feel like, buddied around a little bit more with my sister, but probably because she wasn't the one that was constantly telling him that he was an asshole. So That makes sense.
Were you always aware of your dad's alcoholism, or what's kind of the story there?
It's interesting because I didn't even say that word out loud until I was 28. I was at work working at a different hospital, and I would round with the social worker and the case manager and then the nurses about patients. And we had a very large population of alcohol abuse patients that would come through that hospital. And there was some case that we were talking about, myself and the case manager, and I said something about my dad being an alcoholic. And she just said, with her training and everything, she was just like, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. And I just like stopped in my tracks. And I said, that was the first time I've ever said it out loud. And she's like, if you ever want to talk about it, I'm here. And she was really nice about it. But I just remember that like feeling throughout my whole body. It was just kind of like making it real that I said it, because like we were the family that like we went to my mom's, the town that my mom grew up, pretty much every other weekend to hang out with my family. And that's all my uncles and my dad did was drink the entire weekend that we would be there, driving drunk, drinking. And so my cousins knew, because obviously a lot of their dads were drinking too, but we never really talked about it. It was kind of implied. There were so many times that my dad and I would get in fights in front of my family because I just didn't want to put up with this bullshit. But, you know, we never really talked about it. And then if I had softball tournaments or volleyball tournaments or whatever, like none of my friends knew. We just hid it. We just did the thing that everybody does, you know, that where you kind of just like do whatever you can to hide it from anybody. Like softball tournaments, some of the parents would drink like after the tournament, you know, at the end of the day or whatever, at the hotel or whatever. And I'm sure he always got smashed, and there was probably somebody else there that did too, but none of the players really saw it. So my sister and I kind of felt like we were safe there. But yeah, we were definitely one of the families that from the outside, your dad's so funny. Oh, your dad's so, and my sister and I'd be like, yeah, if you only knew. But we never said it out loud. And I was very anti-drinking in high school. Like my sister and I were in the same group of friends, and some of the people, the friends in our group would drink a little bit if they're at someone's house, but they never did it in front of the girls. They like just didn't want us to see them or whatever. It's still kind of interesting, but I remember saying something a couple times like, I will never drink, but I didn't say why, you know, I didn't want to be like my dad. But it's interesting that I lived it but never spoke about it.
Would your parents fight about his drinking?
Yes. Yeah. But like if my dad was drunk and trying to drive us somewhere, my mom was too scared to drive wherever we were, even if it was in her hometown, that the streets are the same. And we would be like screaming at her from the back seat, like, pull over, like, mom, drive. And my mom would just start yelling at my dad while he's driving. It's just like, woman, what do you want to have your whole family taken out? My grandma would be in the car sometimes. It was so bad.
So what were the circumstances that like led, I don't know if you said it was your mom or just your sister, but to start going to Al-Anon like right after you graduated high school?
I'm not sure. I don't know. There were a couple times that I can remember. Like one time my dad was taking a client out for work, and that was when he would, you know, not come home till like 2 in the morning. He would, we're gonna go for one beer, and you know that would be like 8 hours. And I came downstairs at like 10:30 or something, and he still wasn't home. So I took the yellow pages out, and I opened up AA, and I circled it with a big red marker, and I put it in the middle of the kitchen island. And my mom must have heard me get up, because she came to me and she's like, if your dad would have saw this, he would have been so mad. And I was like, why do you think I did it? God, like just she just shut the yellow pages and threw it back in the drawer. I was like, you are part of the problem, woman. I was like, what on earth? Who is the parent right now? But it was just like that kind of stuff all the time. And he finally supposedly got sober 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. Just he went to
a whim.
Yeah. Oh. Went to AA, didn't I don't think he did any of the steps because I never got an apology. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes.
Interesting.
It was so easy. That also made a lot of my anger come back. And I went through therapy for that too, because I was like, if it was so easy for you to do this, why didn't you do this 40 years ago? And I know circumstances are different, but still, like you'd never even tried.
I know. I get it. I really get it. Was there a particular moment where you have caught yourself realizing that here's one of those circumstances like where I'm not asking clarifying questions and you've been able to?
Yes. I feel like in my job that I'm in right now, I got burned enough early on when I was starting that I, you know, I realized that I had to do it. Otherwise, it was just like dragging things out, because I would like, we get phone calls from hospitals and some and hospice agencies, and we have to just get a bunch of information about patients that who recently passed away, because I work in tissue and eye donation. And often I would know that the nurse told me something, but I needed more information. But I'm like, they're talking and I'm trying to get the information, but I'm like, I had to circle back to get some information. And then I thought, oh, I'll just figure it out, you know, and then I would hang up and then realize I have to call them back, which they're busy. Like, I don't want to interrupt. They called me when they have time. Now I'm calling back when I might be interrupting something. And I did that 3 or 4 times and then realized I can't keep doing this. So I caught myself, because I realized it was just making more work for me. And I'm the one that is supposed to be leading the call, the phone call. Like they're calling me with information, but I have to be in charge of the information that I gather. So I can't just piece stuff together. I can't just, I'll look it up in the EMR, the electronic medical record myself, like just get the information from the nurse and move on. So I'm glad that the, what I've learned working on myself helped me with that. And I only stumbled around doing that a couple of times before I kind of corrected. And now, because even some, I mean, nurses a lot of times like to say like, oh, they already talked to the family and they don't want to donate. And you're like, well, I still have to talk to the family. And I used to just be like, okay. And then I would have to call them back and be like, actually, I have to call the family. Anyways, now I just say, I understand. That's good information. I still have to talk to the family. So it's hard, but
yeah,
I was going to
ask like, yeah, how is it?
It's hard.
Yeah.
And most of the time though, I will say when I have done it recently, it's happened twice recently, the nurse has said, oh, I know, or, oh, I get it. So it's like, it's so dumb because it's like nothing, I'm not really making any more work for the nurse, and it's their patient died. They have to do this anyways. So it's just kind of funny where I feel like I'm being a burden.
It's dumb, but it's not dumb.
Job.
Yeah, it's dumb, but it's not dumb.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Here's me beating myself up. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, like, have you been able to, in those moments, like over time, are you able to have a little bit more compassion for yourself with this?
Yeah. I mean, not the job that I wanted, but I feel like for this time in my life, it's probably been a good learning experience for just like behavioral ways that I have learned that I need to speak up for myself and for the patient that I'm and the family that I'm trying to help. And just, it's like constant exercises on how to work on myself in a forced way because it's my job.
Like, I think that there's probably a lot of things that lie underneath it for you, but then there's also just the element of like the addiction to negative excitement piece too. And it just about how our nervous system, like it's just normal to be in that state of like fear and procrastination and putting things off, and just how like it's so fucking deeply uncomfortable, but like that is more normal to us than the alternative, you know? Yes. So it really is just this, you know, self-perpetuating cycle that we get stuck in.
Yes. Yes. You nailed it right there. That is 100% accurate.
So where are you at now? What is like present for you? What do you feel like you're working on?
I think it's still just constantly learning about just how much the way I grew up affected me. Because it, like everyone says, it's like peeling the layers of an onion and it's so slow. And I think it was at the end of February, I broke up with my therapist. She's very nice, but I just felt like we were kind of rehashing the same things over and over again. So I've been trying to find an IFS therapist because I want to try to figure out just better ways to cope. I think I still have a lot of the anger issues, and I would love to kind of get into, you know, finding that inner teenager and kind of calming her down, because I think she still shows up in certain situations. And I'd love to see what else would come up just from being able to explore that a little bit more.
So give me three things that you like about yourself.
I think I'm a good friend. I think I'm funny. And I like that I am still at this age after, what would be 14 years into CrossFit, that I'm physically strong. Something that I appreciate, that I can still do a lot of things on my own because of being able to like lift heavy odd objects and things like that. I am odd objects. I am a one trip from the car, from the grocery store or whatever person. Call that stubborn, but it's also because I'm like, I know I'm strong enough to handle these 7 bags. I got this. They're like wrapped around my neck. I got this.
I have to do that too. I mean, I live on the 3rd floor and it's like, you got to do one trip. I'm not making multiple trips. So
yeah,
going really good. Creative, yeah. All the grocery bags, got to do it all. Exactly. I totally get that.
Like sweating like a pig, but I will do it in one trip. Cause I also am like, we park underground, have a fobbed key fob door to a elevator and then a key to whatever. It's too much to do two. Just want to do this once.
One and done. Hope or dream for the future? I mean, you kind of just answered that, but feel free to answer it again.
Yeah. I actually, my hope and dream for the future is to find a job that I like better, or I only work Monday through Friday. That's my goal. And something that I feel like better suits my skill set, things that I enjoy doing.
Yes, we all deserve that. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, lady. What you holding on to? Just let it all go. What's making you slow now? Just let it all go.